Hi, everybody. I'm Steve Bordner. I'm an alcoholic. Better ready have those hands go fast. I talk fast. Hands of asbestos. Signers hate me. I'm ready for a nap. I don't know what you people are doing here. If I wasn't talking, I'd be taking a nap. This conference, it's alcoholic. Double everything. Speaker, meeting, dances. I haven't been to a full meeting yet. I got up. I went to the Intimacy and Love Al-Anon meeting. And let me tell you what the alcoholics did with that meeting the first time they saw it. We try to avoid intimacy and recovery as long as we can. I've gone 20 years and avoided it, thank God. I went down there. There were only two guys, me and another guy, that were down there without women. No, so that'll tell you how effective that conference was. Then I left there to come back to Robin's talk, right? And then I had to leave her right in puberty, which was tough. Because she was dressed to kill when I had to go to the Al-Anon luncheon. Then I had to leave the Al-Anon luncheon in the middle of Al-Anon happening to go to my room to think about this for a minute. And then I'm here, and I don't know what I'm going to do about Mark and Wayne tonight. Wayne's feeling really bad because he's not on video. Actually, you are. There's a little beta cam. About three people can get around, and they're going to put you in the bar and say, what not to do, you know, scare the hell out of those drunks down there. No, if you listen, I don't know where you go. I haven't heard Mark tonight. I'll be here because there's food here with him, and and I'm very deeply spiritual when it comes to food. But you know, Wayne and I have ended up being on the same platform for the last couple conferences, and he is my brother, and he just got a great story. So I don't know what you do, but this is, and you've been cheating. Marion's been cheating. You've been going to some other program. We know you're cheating on us. You've been cheating, all right. But you know what? He if you're new, and Alcoholics Anonymous is the weirdest group in the world, okay? I love it. I've loved it. I'm not a very interesting speaker. I don't have a very interesting drunkalogue. I didn't hate AA when I came in. I loved it from the minute I've been here. But this is a bizarre organization. And newcomers, I just want to let you know, it's a bizarre organization. And that was just demonstrated for you. This is an organization in which, if you come in and get drunk, it says in our book, we have to go to the most sordid places on the face of the earth. We'll go down to downtown wherever to get you out of some lice-infested, you know, hotel. If you rob a bank and don't drink, we'll ask you to speak at our conference. If you sleep with your wife's sister, we'll tell you you're getting better. You know, we'll just love you no matter what, unless your cell phone goes off in a meeting. By God, then we're going to rip your heart right out of your bleeding chest. This is a group of people that left for a pack of cigarettes on Halloween, didn't come back to Valentine's, but if you forget to turn off your cell phone, you selfish, self-centered. Because you see, without alcohol, we're a little rigid. We like to think we're bohemian. That's when we're drinking. The flexible people are in Al-Anon, not in Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't think this is true? Just get on your picnic committee. Go to your picnic committee and say something like, you know, I think we ought to move the tables over there this year. The room will get very quiet. Then the oldest of the old timers will raise himself up to his 4'2" height in his walker and say, we don't move the picnic tables at the Founders Group. Bill Wilson sat on that picnic table. Dr. Bob had a little potato salad over there. We don't move the tables. I was up in La Cañada speaking at a very adult meeting. Problem with L.A. meetings is when you're my age, you feel old. You come in here a young Turk and wind up Ward Cleaver. It's a very sad thing to happen to an alcoholic. And it's a very adult, older meeting. It's a very well-to-do area. And this woman was sitting down. They were giving out chips. And she was, 40. She had 29 days, right? She had 29 days. Sweetheart of a lady. And they were giving out chips. And just her codependency got her. They had a 30-day chip and nobody to take it. And she said, well, I've only got 29 days. I'll take the chip. You would have thought she farted. My God, they went crazy. No, you can't take a chip way any time early. You'll die and there'll be plagues and boils and we'll all go if you take it 1 second early. Alcoholics Anonymous, that's right. All the really loose people. I want to thank the committee for asking me to be here. Right now, they're not so sure. They're going, maybe we should have got that other guy. It's a pleasure to be here. They did ask me to make a few announcements. That's not that we've had such a good response to the marathon meetings. We're adding a few. Don't get ahead of me. Trust me. Of course, during the dance tonight, there will be the relationship workshop. That's in any male alcoholic's room. It's a very short workshop. You would be able to go to the workshop and get back in time for plenty of the dance. The women are relating just a little too heavily. You know. But there's a difference. It's just a difference between us. Yeah, I was sitting in my home group the other day, and this woman I know, she came in, and she's just the class. You talked about classes. She's just the classiest mommy you'd ever want to meet. But she was a little wild when she was first sober, when she was drinking, and she said that she shared. I don't know why, because wasn't a women's staggering thing, but she shared that she'd bottomed out on sex in sobriety when she found herself having sex on the back of a Harley in an alley behind a bar. Now, I know. Ooh, oh, yeah, right. Come on. Come on, come on, come on. And you could see all the women, they kind of went, oh, honey, and they, I understand, and me too. And then the men, they were thinking. I have a Suzuki. Anybody need to bottom out after the meeting? I could. Just a servant. Some of the other workshops they've added is it's a four-step workshop. It's called Is Lust Really a Character Defect? It will be presented by the Tuesday Night Men's Stag Group, Oil Rig 101 North Sea. And they have a little note here, female visitors always welcome. There's a fifth-step workshop. Does sharing in the dominant and submissive chat room count as a fifth step? Interesting question. And then there's a six-step workshop. The only thing I'm entirely ready to do is be sponsored by a supermodel. So any of you that are interested in those, oh, God, I'm just so chock full. It's just, I'm so full. I mean, Bob's talk last night just spun my top. And I'll tell you, seriously, sort of meditation on, because it's exactly, Bob talked about the exact nature of his wrongs were his arrogance. And for me, I sometimes think that God or Alcoholics Anonymous is like the elephant with the 10 blind people. You know that story where there's 10 blind people holding onto the elephant. And because they can't see the elephant, the one blind person that thinks that got the trunk thinks that the elephant's like a snake. And then the one blind person that thinks that has the leg thinks it's like a tree trunk. And for me, we come at such different directions sometimes to the same program. For me, the exact nature of my wrongs was I believed I was unlovable. And I understand where I got the message. I understand that it was an incorrect message, but it was the message. That I had to be perfect to get love. See, when I was new and I heard Norma, who was the first speaker I ever heard, I would not have felt entitled to go up and say thank you. I would not have felt entitled to go up to him and say, can I have a cup of coffee with you? See, that's where I came from. And I just want to say, after I speak, there's nothing more useless at a conference than a speaker who's spoken. So, because I know what you guys are doing. All right, now next. Let's see what they got to say tonight. So, I mean, if you see me around the halls and there's just, you want to talk to me because you think I'm doing something up here, I mean, this is a nice job, but it's not a very important job. It really isn't. Being a speaker in AA is like being Tony Curtis in Spartacus. If you remember Spartacus, it's about buff killer Roman gladiator guys, you know, fighting the Roman Empire. And then there's Tony Curtis, and they go, "What do you do?" And he goes, "I'm a singer of songs." And they go, "Oh, great. That's wonderful. That's what we need in the war, a singer of songs. They have the hot lead enema. You can hit the high notes. That's wonderful. We're glad you're here." You know, that's all the speaker is. It's a singer of songs. I mean, the real work is those guys in the pink shirt. The real work is in the archives room. The real work is all the committee meetings where nobody killed each other coming on day. That's where the real work happens. But if for some reason I'm up here or I'm just from out of town and you want to tell me stuff you don't want to tell your sponsor yet, you know, sit down with it. Because I do that all the time. I call central office in L.A. when I want an anonymous sponsor for a minute. They always tell me the same thing. You're going to have to talk. I know. I just want to see how it plays with you first. I want to see how many times I got to read page 63 before I talk to my sponsor. But this was the meditation I was working at, because this applies to my... It says, I who am afraid of rejection, afraid of initiating love for the fear of being inadequate, am sought by the beloved. This kind of love is so far beyond any love I can offer in return, and yet it is a love that demands a response. And that is my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I've come in here and I have seen things and been given things that I felt that I was not entitled to, and about 3 years of sobriety I just gave up on I deserve. You know, I have no idea what I deserve. I don't know if I deserve the good stuff in my life, and I don't know if I deserve the bad stuff. I just got the stuff I got in my life, and I've got to figure. So I've got some phrases in AA that I don't like so much, one of which is, "God will never give you more than you can handle." Not my favorite phrase. I don't know who made it up, but they have a real wrong idea of what I can handle. I can barely handle brushing my teeth 3 times a day. What I do believe is, if I'm willing, God will give me the ability to handle whatever happens. You know? I don't like that phrase. If you're having trouble with God, think how much trouble God's having with you. Not happy with that one either. Don't think God's having any trouble with me, you know. If he can handle Bosnia, he can handle Steve Bordner. I mean, it's not like I got up this morning and God's going, "Oh, God, I was having a good day. Now Steve's up. I need some Valium." Jeez. That just makes God into my mother one more time, you know what I mean? Just don't think. I'm the only one in trouble with God. That's me. That's, you know, I don't. There are lots of stuff I don't like. The kingdom of God is not a democracy. I love that line. I just have trouble with everything. I have trouble with gravity. I have trouble. I mean, when I get to heaven, I don't know about you, but I need God for about 100,000 years. I want to talk to him. I want to understand, why did you do it this way? I mean, just why? Just minor stuff, too. Why invent, if you're going to invent two sexes, why, after they've made love, do you have one wants to go to sleep and one wants to talk? Why did you do that? That just seems a prescription for trouble. Both talk, both sleep. I mean, it seems simple to me. But believe me, God is a joker, you know? I mean, God just is hilarious. Just messes with me all the time. Just look at the guys I sponsor. I mean, you know, I sponsor guys and I have to tell them, "Look, if you don't call her bitch in an argument, it'll go better." I mean, this is exactly where they start. I love this section. They got the hands up the whole, "Oh, yeah." I mean, I tell them this and they look at me like I'm crazy. "You sure?" If I don't say bitch, what do I say? "Well, how about honey?" "I don't know, man. Not sure about that one." I've been accused of not sharing much of a drunkalogue. Everybody who talked, including the Al-Anons, probably have worse drunkalogues than I do, you know? It seems to me that a couple types of people speak in AA meetings. One's the guys who are tied down in Folsom doing life, who now run Microsoft, those guys. I never went to jail. I'm short, I'm white. In jail, I'm an hors d'oeuvre. I'm not going. We'll have him before lunch. All right, go to the wait, right to the weight room. And then... then there seems to be these guys that wake up in Reno with $100,000 in a suitcase and 12 hookers in the room, and that didn't happen either. Yet. So, I just drank myself. Don't get me wrong. I drank suicidally. I'm the last. You look at my family. I come from a family of alcoholics. I'm the very last person you would think would get sober. Right? I drank suicidally. But I drank alone for the most part. I sat in my chair. I love that commercial. That commercial now, those guys, they put, trying to put in their, ah! You know, that commercial, that was me drinking. You know, ah, the. That's my pickup line in the bars. Ah! So, ah, right, yeah. I didn't do well in the bars. Although a couple of the Al-Anons are breaking into a sweat right now. I can see them. It's working. No, actually, right before I got sober, I went to this bar that's called Group Therapy. And the men's room was right next to the women's room, and I'm really in the bag. And I'm leaning up against the door, and Miss Right Now walks out. And I look at her, and I look at her, and I give her my best, how's the here hammer here? I mean, who could resist that, right? And she looks at me and then goes, Sima Hamahunara! Boom, out the door. God's will working in my life. No, but I would sit in my chair and cry because they missed the word bubblegum on the $10,000 pyramid. And laugh hysterically because Jillian was leaving Seneca one more time on Ryan's Hope. Then watch some Twilight marathons. Yeah, mine's a favorite of them when they capture the devil. I like that one. So, you know, and that was it. That's that one gray, miserable day after the other. And I think when we take away all the chartering of the planes and all the supermodels and all the stuff, that's really what happens to all of us when we drink. Just sitting in a chair. Trying to feel, and Daryl said it last night, trying to feel whole again. So you see, that's what alcohol does for me. I do feel separated, and I'm of the opinion that part of the separation isn't alcoholism. It's part just of the human condition. You know? In the 60s, we had that you can't experience my experience line, you know, that we do, to a certain extent, live alone. And if I'm in a selfish, self-centered state, and separated from God, that God is what makes this language of the heart possible. And I didn't know that, this higher power. But for me, the alcohol did that. See, I didn't know what was wrong with me. All I knew is when I drank, I felt okay. And when I didn't feel okay anymore, I kept drinking enough trying to feel okay again. See, I'm an alcoholic. I have a physical allergy to the drug ethyl alcohol. When I drink it, I want more. And I know when I say that to alcoholics, I get flatlined. Boom! To say that wanting more is abnormal. You guys look at me and you go, well, of course you want more, Steve. That's why there is more. If there's no more, we'll go get some more. You know? I joke about this, it was true. I got addicted to antique shops in sobriety. I found in antique shops a thing that's very strange. It's called a shot glass. Do you guys know about these? Shot glasses? Let me explain the concept of a shot glass to you. A shot glass is what a non-alcoholic uses to make sure they don't get too much alcohol in their drink. Let me demonstrate what a non-alcoholic can do. They'll have a drink in their hand and they'll go, I'm done. For those of you on tape, the very attractive speaker walked away from the glass. They do. They walk away from the car, right? Not us. We're sitting there. I'm done. One more. Ha ha ha! My kind of girl. That's my kind of girl. I like Sacramento, yeah. See, but me, I take 2, 4, 12, 13 ounces of ethyl alcohol. I drink them. They hit my stomach. The sun rises. Paralyzes my legs. Goes up my chest. Flushes my face. Goes out my fingers. And every pore in my body goes, ah. A little anxious right now, aren't you? A little sweat on your lip. Your sphincter got a little tighter there. Because I just woke him up, huh? Ah, ah, oh yeah, ah, man, let's get the hell out of here and go drink. He said, ah. This guy that talks to us. I mean, I don't listen to him much, but he still talks. If you're new, he has a lot to say to you. And he'll still talk to you, you just won't listen to him as much. But he says things. He says things like, what's a Zima? What's a Zima? What's a dry beer? Wet and dry, 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 wet and dry. Long Island iced tea. We never had one of those. I mean, you know, if he's new, he says things. If you're new, he says things to you like this. Okay, 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 okay. He talks fast because he wants to drink. Okay. You got 90 days. You better drink soon before you get so much time you can never drink again. Let's have a non-alcoholic beer. Now, and I have no opinion. People, I don't drink them. I don't drink them because for me to drink a non-alcoholic beer is for me to go to the house of prostitution and listen to the piano player. It ain't gonna happen. I'm gonna tell myself that's why I'm going. I'm just going for the Bach, the Mozart. I'll get a room. Now when you get a lowly, he talks to you like, hey, he talks to you. You're a very good guy. I was in a meeting. It was called the Musicians Meeting. Very cool meeting. This was years ago. I had like 9 years. The highest cake that night was 5 years. You would think if you were in a room where somebody has 5 years and you have 8, you'd feel pretty good. Wow, I had more time, not arrogantly so, but I had more time than the longest cake in the room. Not in alcoholism. No. They had 5 years. You're still here 8 years later. You're really sick. All the healthy people have stopped going to meetings. See, he wants to get me back home by myself, alone, watching the television. Then he can say things to me like, you're a very good person. You're a very good person. You can have one drink. Just one drink. You can have just one drink. You can have one. Let's just have one. Let's just have one drink. One. Come on. One. 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 He cares nothing about being interesting. Just one. 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 He's the rain man of demons. I'm a very good drinker. Very good drinker. Very good. 5 minutes to Jack Daniels. 5 minutes to Jack Daniels. Now, I know, if I ever take that drink, you're a very good person. You can have one. You can have one. You can have one. I take the drink. Boom. You rotten loser. You. You just threw away 20 years of sobriety. You might as well drink your miserable self to death. If I could ever get him in front of me, I'd go, you're not consistent. So we don't care. Our job's to kill you. We hate you. So why do you talk to us rather than your sponsor? Alcohol's a pimp. It's a pimp. Everybody in this room has been his boy or his girl. Right? A little money in your pocket for Thanksgiving, gonna buy a turkey, go home and see grandma. Pimp says, get in the car. And where's my money? Need a few toys and a bike for the kids for Christmas? Yeah, you're not home. Get in the car. And where's my money? Your mother's dying, your father's sick, everybody else, it's a funeral, everybody else is helping with the family. Where are you? You're out getting loaded. Get in the car, and where is my money? And then some nice judge or therapist or wife or spouse sends you to A&A, and the pimp becomes Barry White. I really love you, baby. I love you. I'm not going to be bad to you, baby. I love you so much. They don't like you there at A&A, baby. I love you, you know? So you take the drink, and it's get in the car, and where's my money? See, I know one thing. I don't know what's going to happen to me in sobriety. If I drink today, I can predict with absolute certainty what will happen to my life. I can't tell you how long it'll take, but I know what will happen. There are no surprises if I drink. What I can't predict is what's going to happen to me if I stay sober. That's where all the surprises, that's where all the miracles, that's where all the magic is today. It's just it doesn't work as fast as alcohol. It's been a very strange year. I want to tell you a couple of stories, and Bob was talking about last night, a couple of people who died. And one guy was the sweetest. It was the first time in 20 years I've gone to an AA memorial full of people for a guy that never really made it. Most of the memorials I've gone to have been for guys who've had a long time, and sometimes even if they go out. And they had a long time. This guy never had more than 90 days. And you should have seen the people at his memorial. And he was a very, very special person. I mean, I believe all people are special. There's no such thing as a boring person. You know, it's my ability to appreciate people. That's the only problem. And so the fact of the matter, this was just one of those guys that could get under your skin. And I don't know why he didn't make it. You know, my book says that it could not or would not. It tells me in that sentence not to judge. Some people just don't and some people can't. And I don't know which is which. It's God's business. You know? And he died a horrible, terrible death. And that's when I stopped liking that phrase, stick with winners. I mean, I understand what it means. Stick with the people who are sober. Stick with the people who are going to meetings. Stick with the people who are trying. But this guy was a winner and he died drunk. Because he kept showing up in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, trying to get it. And I don't know if maybe if he'd had one more, he would have got it. But in my book, he was a winner. And then there was another friend of mine, Jay, and Jay had a long time, and Jay had some back trouble, needed to take some medication, and you know, but then he took a drink, and I don't know how that worked, he just did, you know, and he came back and he couldn't get it, and Jay had started workshops, and Jay, they found him in an apartment, he killed the woman he was with, and then he had committed suicide. Could be me. You know, what a horrible... I think about him sometimes, and I think about what the last few minutes of his life must have been like. And as I was in my home group, and we were sharing about him that day, and we were sharing about how much we missed him, a guy next to me, when he shared, said, he was my sponsor, and I'm sober today because of that man. See? Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, 1 and 1 equals 3, and I can't... That's the problem with God. I want to put God in a box. I want to rub his little belly and have him come out and grant me 3 wishes. That's the kind of God I want. You know? I want a God that I can rewrite the big book, step over to the nearest bar, take a few drinks, and you get to keep your time. That's the kind of God I want. I want a kind of God praying only for every damn thing I want and getting it. See, and that's not the kind of God that I find in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the kind of God that's in everything, in the successes and the failures. It's the kind of God that doesn't care. There's nothing I can do to make him love me anymore and nothing I can do to make him love me any less, which is a problem for me. See, don't get me wrong. I'm glad God loves you, but I'm not happy he loves you as much as me. Because I'm so hacked, I have to be special just to be okay. And so I want God to love me just as much more than you. You know, I want to be under his arm. This is King David and Steve Wardner, my guys. That would just make me okay with you, see? But what that does is it takes all the performance out of it. But what does that mean? See, I always want to be Hamlet, and sometimes that means God wants me to be the spear carrier. I love doing this, but sometimes that means I'm also the scroll guy in my meeting. I waited until they got rid of that circumcision rule, but I'm the scroll guy, you know. I put the scrolls up, because that's the kind... And somebody said, well, that's a newcomer commitment. Uh-uh. They're going to have to fight me for it. I want to just be a worker among worker, a friend among friends. And when you get time, when you start doing this, all of a sudden something thinks you know something just because of this. And for me, just to be, excuse the profanity, average... ordinary is a spiritual gift, because I will separate myself out from you again. I will have an agenda. I know that, you know, when I turn my will and my life over to care, I told you, I just got out of the three years, and it's not like something that stays constant, but I stopped trying to decide whether I deserve stuff. It just happens. That doesn't mean I don't try to be responsible. That doesn't mean I don't try to learn from my mistakes. But I'll tell you, in my opinion, the hardest step in the program is not four, six. Six. Entirely ready. Huh? Now, the first problem with that is when I came in here, what you call character defects were my life goals. So we have to have a whole change of idea. It's that repent thing, of looking at it a different way. But then it's like it's entirely ready. And that sixth step, you know, Bill says, the old catechism, what's the purpose of life? To know God and enjoy Him forever. And Bill kind of puts it a different way. He says, what's the purpose of life? To grow like our Creator, which is to be perfect, and yet acknowledge that we'll never be perfect. Now, I don't know about you, I don't like that. I like black, white, right, wrong, no gray. No ambivalence. I want to be perfect, or you never have to be perfect. Go ahead, screw up as much as you want. That's what I want, see? And yet there's this bind in here. I never get to decide when I'm done, and yet I can't go away. And I know I have an agenda, and I know I have an agenda because I've watched too many people in AA have an agenda. I have a lovely, sweet friend, one of the most talented people that you ever want to meet. And one of her agendas was, if she stayed sober and worked the program, she was going to be successful in her career, and she just wasn't. So she took a drink. And she's not back. I know I have an agenda. When this happens, if this happens, if I work the steps, I'm going to get better is one of my agendas. Now, it says I may have to contain myself with patient progress, but it also says, relieve me of these character defects, the ones that stand in the way of working with you and others, not the ones you want me to keep. And I have come to believe that sometimes He lets me keep them, even though I'm willing to have them removed. See, but my agenda is, if I'm willing and doing it, you're going to take them. He goes, no, I like you with that one. Not hurting anybody, and it keeps you tied to me. Now, I'm not very big. Really, that's what he says, you know. It keeps you tied to me. Because listen, this is my agenda, folks. What I want to do is get good enough so I can get away from you. I'm trying to buy my way out of having to deal with you, okay? I want to be able to say, see, I've done this, 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 and this. Now leave me alone. Then go home and be very lonely. Turn off my answering machine and resent you for not calling. See? I'm not very big, so I never fought, okay? I'm not the guy, I didn't fight. In fact, I almost got in a fight at 9 years of sobriety. The last fight I almost got in. I was sitting in the back of a meeting, and I don't know about you, do they talk in meetings up here? Do they? Yeah. That they do in Southern California. They go to a meeting and talk. And so I'm in the back of the room. That's why I like to sit in the front. And I'm in the back of the room, and these guys are talking. And I'm waiting, they're reading everything, and it's sort of like in the movies, you wait for the trailers and then you worry about whether they're going to talk. And so finally, you know, they're starting the sharing, so I breathe in and out, because, you know, as soon as you tell an alcoholic anything, you're in trouble. And I go, excuse me, do you mind not talking during the meeting? And they go, yeah, and keep talking. Well, the red veil comes down, and you're there before you're there, and all of a sudden I'm telling them to shut the up, and this guy's like 30 days sober, 33, I can't lick my lips, he's detoxing, not a good situation. We're standing up yelling at each other, I got 9 years of sobriety, the secretary's saying, you guys got to be quiet, we sit down, he says, go outside, I'll kick your butt, and I'm leaving. I'm going, totally insane. Luckily, 15 other guys got up and came with us. And Scott R. picked me up off the ground. You know, Scott, he's a pretty big guy. Now, it's hard to think you're going to kick anybody's butt when your feet are doing this. Lollipop killed, the lollipop killed. He went, walk away. And like sanity returned, I realized I didn't want to fight this guy. I didn't want him to hurt me. I didn't want to hurt him. I didn't want to get kicked out of my home group for 6 weeks for a fight. I walked away. You know? I made amends to him. I ended up sponsoring him, actually, a couple times. just like dating an AA. Get up at the podium and go, I don't want a relationship. They're lined up out the door. I'm looking for someone. You're in, it's Citizen Kane. But I made my amends to the meeting, and then he started again, right? He said, this is what he did to me, because in everybody's book, there's a chapter where you should be by now. You're never there. This is what happened when I home. I made amends to the meeting. I made amends to the secretary. I made amends to this guy. Clean slate. I've done everything. This guy starts into me. You should be better than that at 9 years. You can never go back to that meeting again. Because what I have a problem doing is accepting my imperfection. Now, there's a wonderful book called The Spirituality of Imperfection. And in that book, he says that every human relationship has the potential to harm and to heal because every human relationship is between two imperfect people. And deep down inside of me is still the belief that I need to be perfect in order to be loved. And if I'm not perfect, you won't love me. And so the agenda is, if I keep doing this, I'm going to get perfect, and you're going to, and then one day, I don't know when it happened for me, you just realize, you know what? There are just going to be aspects of my life in which I may fail for the rest of the time I'm breathing, and am I willing to accept that? In the pre-Al-Anon talk at the luncheon, I think it's Jackie kept saying, God's in charge. God is in charge. I believe that God is absolutely in charge of everything. God's absolutely in charge of when I'm thinking about taking a drink and you run into the sponsor, come go into the liquor store. God is absolutely in charge of families being reunited. God's absolutely in charge of every good thing that happens in my life. And then there's the other stuff. Parents die. A couple conferences I spoke at, one of the primary speakers had lost a child in recovery. I believe God's in charge when a plane's upside down and going into the ocean. You know, there's a story. It's about two rabbis, and they're coming home because at that time, this is an old Russian story, they would travel the circuit. And they're coming home, and as they come home to their village, the Cossacks are attacking their village. And they're sitting on this hill watching everything and everyone they love be slaughtered. And one of the rabbis falls to his knees and says, oh, that I were God. Another rabbi says, why? Would you stop it? He says, no. Then I would understand. See? What I've had to come to accept in my sobriety is God has revealed himself and God is a mystery. And I don't get to know it all. I mean, like I said, when I get to heaven, I got a lot of questions. A lot of questions. But what you have given me is the acceptance that to whatever appearances, I think Bill Wilson wrote something, whatever appearance to the contrary, somehow, even as horrific as it may seem, there is a higher power that is somehow making this all come out for the good. And what I know in my own life is all the failures, and this is the weird thing, this is a very strange program, Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, come on, folks, it's a weird place we're at, right? I mean, the first thing they tell you is you're not a bad person trying to get good, you're a sick person trying to get well. Lie. Lie. It's a lie. I mean, come on, we lie to newcomers all the time in here. Newcomers, we lie, okay? We lie. They tell you they never heard a lie in AA, that's a big lie, okay? I lie to newcomers every second I can if I think it'll keep them sober. They call me up and go, you didn't, I didn't, why, me. And I go, read page 2. I don't know what's on 2. Just came to my head. 10 minutes later, thank you so much, that helped me. I got exactly what I needed. So I read 2, find out what the hell I said. Big lie. Alabama, my spiritual grandmother used to say this all the time. You're not a bad person trying to get a sick person. All right, so if I'm not a bad person trying to get good, but a sick person trying to get well, how come I got to do a moral inventory, huh? Last time I looked, heart patients weren't doing moral inventories. No. Last time I looked, people with sugar diabetes weren't going, hey, Fred, when you were out of town, I slept with Ethel. I'm not doing it no more. No. Alcoholics got to do moral inventories. Because, you see, me becoming an alcoholic I believe I came from an alcoholic home. It's in my genetic makeup. I don't think I could have missed it. Some of you had to work a little harder. Right? It's just very, very forgiving disease when it comes to that. You know, you don't have to have the genetic makeup. But you know what? Becoming an alcoholic is no moral issue to it, but what I do when I'm drinking does. If I drive drunk and take your grandmother out in a crosswalk because I need another drink, that's a moral act. See? And when I came here, I didn't know what was wrong with me. And what's the problem is now, you guys have told me what was wrong with me. You have taught me that if I drink, people get hurt. Not just me, other people get hurt. And so I am responsible for treating this thing you've taught me that I have. And I don't think the disease concept was ever intended to get me out of taking responsibility for treating what's wrong with me. You know? Well, few people agree with that. What do you say? Disease concept more? I don't know. I lost it. Yeah, never underestimate the... We're not the most intelligent organization here either. You know, it really, we're basic. We're real basic do stuff, empty ashtrays. There's a friend of mine was in a meeting one time, and a well-known speaker was sharing and said that a couple of beers did more for him than Nietzsche ever did. And swear to God, the people in front of her turned and one said, "What's a Nietzsche?" And the other one said, "I don't know. I think it's a kind of sex." So, you know... This is not an academic organization. Now, come on, the most close thing we got to academics is Joe and Charlie from Arkansas. So, you know, how lame is that? You know, that's great. So this... And what I found is the surrenders I made when I was 1 year don't keep me sober when I'm 20 years. And Wayne said this last time he shared, and it really struck me, which was, you know, when I share about these things, and when I share about other people, they have nothing to do with it. They are just the mirrors for me. Alcoholics Anonymous is a mirror, and the people I get in my life, they may have their side. They may have done things that they shouldn't have done, and that's their journey. But they always bring out stuff in me. And that's the only reason I ever share about it. But, you know, some of you know, I got in this relationship where she was cheating when we got married, and that's not good. You know, it doesn't usually make marriages last, but it was devastating for me, right? Devastating. But what I found out was how unforgiving a person I am. Forget that. That was a whole journey. What I found out was, and it says in the book, we thought we could wrest satisfaction and happiness from life if only we managed well. And that's talking about the sober alcoholic. Somewhere in my program, I came in thinking, do bad things, good things should happen. Do bad things, good things should happen. Yeah, I know I slept with your sister, I killed a chihuahua, I spent every dime you've got. How can you leave me? That was my reasoning. And I was surprised she would leave. I mean, it was shocking to me how, I was like Jerry Springer. After I've done so much for you, that's all those people say. I've given you everything. And they're cheating with 13 people. So, I mean, you know, and so you guys taught me slowly but surely, do good things should happen. Do good things, good things, good things, good things, good. But somewhere in my alcoholic brain, trying to be perfect, trying to get back in control, trying to manage the unmanageable, I thought I made good into God. And so I changed that into do good, good always happens. And what I found out with this is you can do it all right and it can turn out all wrong. And then why are you going to stay sober? Alan McGinnis said it. One day you're going to come to AA. You're going to get everything you ever came to AA to want. Or you're going to find out you're never going to come to get what you came to get. And then why are you going to stay sober? Because that's my agenda. And I had to find out that good couldn't be God. That what I was to do was to go out, do the best I could. And if it turned out okay, thank you very much. And if it turned out all bad, give it to him. And somehow, you know, when I've shared, and I shared about that for a lot, I can't tell you how many people came up to me. All the people who'd been betrayed. All the people who'd been him and her. I had a friend of mine who was her, and this was one of my best friends, and I could no longer hate her and not love my friend. I mean, it put me in a box. I had to forgive both of them. And this can only be done through me talking to you about it, through my sponsor, but any of you. I'm convinced. You know what I'm convinced of? I'm convinced on a bad day, I'm better off sitting down with a newcomer with 30 days and listening to what they tell me than listening to my own head. They'll give me good advice. They can't take it themselves. When this whole thing happened with her, I got his phone number. And I promised my sponsor I wouldn't call him. Then I changed my mind. So I went to the craziest person in my group. I mean, this guy's got, but he's nuts. I mean, he's publicly nuts. He's an entertaining, publicly crazy person to get him to co-sign. Because what I wanted to do was call this guy up and say, you know, blah, blah, asked me to call you. This is Steve. They said, we're getting a divorce. I guess you're happy with yourself. And by the way, the AIDS test came back positive. What, do you think I'm a nice guy? So I knew he was going to co-sign me on this. My sponsor, you need to be a loving, kind person regardless of her behavior. Click. I don't even need to call that idiot to know what he's going to say. Loving, kind person beyond any name. All right, fine. So I went up to this guy and told him what I wanted to do. He looked me right in the eye and said, Steve, we don't do that. God in a box. God's got me in a box. One more time, and I don't like the box. I don't like the box. I want to rub the fat belly and have it. You know, most of the grandparents and mothers and grandfathers that I know in an AA have passed away. I don't like that. I don't like death. I'm not happy about it. You know, I miss Alabama. But what I've learned here is that life breaks your heart. It's just going to break your heart. It's supposed to. But what I've gotten is that I no longer have to kill my heart with alcohol in order to get through it. That if I'm willing to go, it's your game, not mine. If I'm willing to share with you, if I'm willing to set in meetings, whatever it is that happens. Eventually, Rusty, who is an Al-Anon that I heard speak up in Oregon a couple of years ago, and she's got an amazing story. And in her sobriety, two of her sons committed suicide with alcohol and drugs. And then her daughter came to her and told her that her husband, who was a member of our program, had been molesting her for years. And then when the husband was dying, the daughter said, I've got to go see my dad. Will you come with me? And Rusty said the most amazing thing. She said, that is not okay. That will never be okay. But I can be okay. See? And to me, that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. That what you've taught me, if I will hang on and not take a drink and not cop out and keep doing the things I'm doing and showing up in a meeting when I don't want to show up and talk to one more newcomer and just do it one more time and one more day and one more lap, it might not be all right, but it can be okay. I can be okay in a world that is not okay. What a gift. What a gift from a bunch of drunks who came here with no living skills. You know? It is an amazing program to me. If you're new, I just want to say I think God's got us in a double bind. I believe you will work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, or you will work the 12 steps of alcoholism, but what you will do is you will work a 12-step program. It's called a double bind. God wins, which is what a surprise. See, because I'm always surprised God wins. I think, you know, all I can make is caca, he can make butterflies, but I think I'm going to out-manipulate him. What's that behind your hand, Steve? Nothing. See, nothing right here, Dad, nothing. And I have this problem. See, and this is my problem. I come from an alcoholic home. I'm not blaming anybody. They were very good people. It's just the truth, you know. And it had something to do with my alcoholism. Apple trees make apples. Come on. You know, somehow we want to suspend this rule for alcoholic homes. No, it had nothing to do. I mean, I understand people who say, I had no alcohol in my family, became an alcoholic. And I understand people like me, came from an alcoholic family, had something to do. Not everybody, but some of us. The ones I don't understand, yeah, all drunks, but had nothing to do with me. Okay. Guess apple trees makes oranges sometimes. I don't know, you know. Just a weird logic, because we're not going to blame anybody, which is good for us. I don't want to blame anybody. I'm just saying this is the facts of my life. And they no more wanted to be alcoholic than I did. Mother was a lovely, wonderful woman when she was sober. Now, the fact of the matter is my dad was the non-alcoholic without a program, and he never protected me. I mean, wonderful guy. I love my father, retired sergeant major, best guy I ever knew. But he just didn't know what to do with alcoholism. And so for me, my idea of God when I came in here wasn't somebody looking to punish me, was somebody who just didn't care very much. So when you ask me to turn my will and my life over and to abandon myself, and for me, abandonment is you're 5 years old, you're on the side of the pool, your parents in the water saying, jump, and you're in midair. That's abandonment. Bill Wilson uses the word twice. Author uses the word twice. It's pretty important. Now, if it's the drunk, you may be five, but you're not jumping. Because they're down there. Go ahead, jump. I'll catch you. But the co-alcoholic looks pretty good compared to that, you know? And so you're in midair and they go, oh, but I got to take care of your mother. Plash. So I just had, and so when you asked me to turn my will and my life over to care, it was just like, but nobody will be there. And of course, what I did was a fourth step and then a fifth step, and I did what the book said. Today, I've got to tell you, I've got a God that I know is there every second, a God that is obsessed with me, a God that thinks more about me than I think about myself. What a great deal. I don't want one of those gods that's way out there. I want one that's like Steve Bordner. There he is. Yeah. A friend of mine, Kenny, says this. It's his line, so I give him credit. But he says, you know, right now, God's sitting somewhere with his wallet, and he's got your picture right there going, see this? This is my favorite child right here, this one. Oh, isn't that cute? Let's have a group hug, okay? I did forget to tell you the added Al-Anon workshop. It's Potpourri and Serenity, the connection. So, but this God is a joker. I'm going to fit it because God never does. See, this is the problem. I just am confused. I know now this, that I have no idea what God's will is most of the time. I know don't steal, don't lie, those basics. But when it comes to the subtle stuff, a couple of years ago, so some people had asked me to come up and speak up here, and they'd call me and they said, hey, Steve, we heard your tape. We'd like it. And this is a very nice thing to have. You know, I still go, you got the right number? And they go, we have two conferences. One is in Fresno and the other's in Monterey, and we want you to speak in Fresno. Don't get ahead of me. Now, the alcoholic part of me goes, thank you very much. Thank the committee. I'll be very glad to come up to Fresno. Thank you very much. Click. You loser, you. You must be a rotten speaker or they'd ask you to Monterey, not the duty conference in Fresno. People just ask you to come speak. I was going to be the young people speaker. My God, you know, long after it would do me any good, but still the young people speaker. So I, you know, my rule is I'll do anything to just stay sober that I would to get drunk. And this is when the rain washed out the five and I'm driving up to Fresno. God knows I'd have stopped and got a room and a six pack. You know, now I get up to Fresno. And before I go out, I was reading a lot of stuff in my family. And I had my grandfather's obituary. And I also had my biological father's obituary. I'm adopted. And my biological father, who's the big question mark in my life, who was an alcoholic, and they say the classic thing about him, hell of a guy when he wasn't drinking. In 1965, had fallen asleep in a chair, passed out in a chair with a cigarette, and burned himself to death in Paler, California. And the ambulance took him to the Fresno hospital to die, a city I'd never been in before, where I was going to go out, and almost 30 years to the day, speak about what happened to his son when the light of recovery came into his room. But I wanted to go to Monterey. And God's will is always Fresno. I've got to surrender to that if I want to stay sober. Because if you wrestle with God, you end up with a limp, and in our case, probably drunk. See? My grandfather, who I talked about, in 1935, Christmas, he came home. He was drunk. He had gone to the church for a while and gotten sober because my grandmother, he'd come home drunk one time, she tied him down. She had the first aversion therapy program. She tied him down to the bed with nylon stockings and poured castor oil down his throat. I know, abusive, huh? Poor alcoholic. He went to the church for about 2 years and got sober. And who knows what happened? Then he forgot. They didn't have a... You know, some people do stay sober in the church their whole life. Not my granddad. He relapsed. He came home one Christmas, right before Christmas, drunk. They were supposed to go uptown and shop. My grandmother looked at him and said, you're drunk. Stay with the kids. Left him. As soon as she left, he went to the counter, got a rope. The tree he crawled up, drunk, had no branches for 30 feet. He put the rope around the branch, put it around the neck, and flung himself into the darkness. In 1968, my biological mother, who was my mother's, both my mothers were sisters, who didn't drink, things didn't go her way, so she got drunk and she turned the car on. And my adopted mother, in 1975, took a candle in her country and western music because she didn't want to die in the dark like her father, and went down and did the same thing her sister did. And then in 1979, when their grandson and their son came to a place between the darkness and the light, you guys were there. And see, what you've got to understand is there's a whole bunch of people up here on this platform with me. There's Wayne, and there's Walt, and there's Clem and Lisa, and all the people, and Alabama, and Mike Ross, and all the drunks that are here and aren't here, and Reginald Darlington Wilson III, who was a mayor of a little town in South Carolina, and when he was running for mayor, they ran a campaign, said that the mayor had too many empty liquor bottles in his wastebasket, and Reggie decided to answer them publicly. He said, of course there were empty liquor bottles in his wastebasket. Those people didn't expect him to throw away full ones, did they? They reelected Reginald Darlington Wilson III. But on this side is June and Hoyt and Betty and all the drunks who die, and Jay and Jay and all the drunks who died drunk, who were crying out for the light. You know, they come with us. And I'm so blessed. And I can't explain that to you, but I can tell you this. I know that I've had a spiritual experience because I sit in meetings and I see kids give cakes to their mothers. And I see mothers give kids to their cakes. And without a spiritual experience, I'm sitting down there going, how come it's not my mother? How come my mother, how come I never get to give a cake from, how come my mother didn't get sober? But inside a spiritual experience, it is my mother. Your mothers are my mothers, your fathers. I've heard fathers who got sober and found abandoned children. That's my father who I've never met, you know, because one and one equals three. I've had guys say, how can I ever make it up? And I got to quit. I've quit. One ninth step story, which I love the ninth step. My dad, when he died, he was going through strokes. I was about a year sober, and my dad was the greatest man I've ever known. And when he became a baby, sometimes God blesses us, I believe, to do for our parents what they did for us, to care for them the same way when we were infants, we get to care for them, and I couldn't handle it. At a year of sobriety, I couldn't handle it, you know, and I just couldn't see this man that when I was on his shoulder, I was the safest I'd ever been in my life. Waste away to nothing. And I visited him, I was there, but when it came time to feed him or clothe him, I always had something else to do, and he passed away. And as I was doing my inventory work, I knew I owed him amends. I knew I had had a great opportunity, and I owed him amends. And Bob was talking about, you know, the slate being even. And sometimes, you know, the people aren't here. I know guys in AA, they're 20, 30 years sober. They're the greatest guys in AA, and their kids still won't talk to them. And yet they've got sons and daughters that they sponsor. You know, I've just got to be willing to take it from where it comes. See, I always want to be loved from where I put it out. I love Wayne, so I want Wayne to love me back. And forget, no, Clem's going to love you. No, I want Wayne to love me. I don't care. I don't want Clem's love. I want Wayne. God goes, you get to take the love from Clem. I'm not codependent, you know. I mean, just blow yourself up. I don't care. Don't need an Al-Anon meeting. Clem's going to love you, or you can blow up. What do you want? Because Wayne ain't available. Wayne is speaking tonight. He's pissed off about the video, so he's not available. Clem's available. And so, no, but I want Wayne. See, then. So I knew I owed my father an amend. Now, when I first moved to L.A., I was scared to death. I didn't know anybody there. AA's the only place where you can move somewhere, and all of a sudden there's people who got to love you or they'll die. And I used to go down to County General, 6,000 ward. And now I've got a very queasy stomach. If I come to your house and have to do some stuff in your bathroom, the water's running, you know. I'm just very private about that stuff for a guy from the 60s. And for a guy that was, during the Quaalude period, still tied up in the morning. You know, that's just another thing. That just some things are private. And all of a sudden, I'm in this guy's room, and he needs to get on the pot. And I'm getting him on the pot, and there's a nurse, and we're taking care of his business. And he's back in the bed, and I'm in the hall, and it hits me. My God, he even looked like my father. And one and one equals three. See, I don't know. My dad was gone. I couldn't do it face to face. But I guess he and my father and God just knew I needed to do it. So doggone bad, they gave me somebody to do it with. If I'll just hang on when it seems like. See, sometimes my mind goes, all the good times are gone in AA. You know, the golden period is gone. And now, but it's not. It's every day if I'm willing to sign up for it. I've just got to remember that God doesn't work the way I think he should, and I've got an agenda, and when the agenda finally comes down to God's way or my way, it's going to be the highway if I'm not willing to surrender one more time. And that sixth step keeps me here because I have never been entirely, don't expect to ever be entirely, and yet I have to stay here to try to work towards entirely. I had a woman come up to me. She had 5 years sober. She said, Steve, I've got 5 years. I've got the house, the guy, the job. I don't think I'm going to ever drink again. I've got everything I ever wanted. Why should I keep coming back to AA? Well, let's not get too heavy, like we never thought of that. I mean, if you like everybody in AA, you're not going to enough meetings. And if you haven't ever thought, do I really want to go to this stuff anymore? You know, it's crossed my mind, the silent news, you know, in my head. Do we really, you know? And I looked at her and I said, the only reason I can tell you is because you can't be sure any other woman with 5 years will be there. See, when I got sober, some guy with 20 years was in the meeting going, Kojak tonight or AA? Kojak, AA, Kojak, AA. And he went, AA. See, and when I sit home going, friends, AA, friends, AA. Sometimes I got to go, AA, because I can't be sure another guy with 20 years is going to be there. And that's the debt I pay upline, not downline. And when I come, it's like that thing of separation. I can be separated and not know it. And as soon, last night, I don't know about you, I was just so connected. And I've been so connected. But there's this line in the Bible that says, we're like people who look in a mirror. And once we go away from the mirror, we forget what we look like. And that's what happens to me. Once I come to AA and you guys reflect back to you, we're just glad to see you, Steve. And once I go away, I'm going, well, nobody likes me, and I'm not, and you know, and there's guys with 30 days that know more people than I do in AA, and they've heard my story, and nobody wants me to talk. And you know, and it's like, I got to come back all the time because I can't hold on to it. And I'm very grateful for that because I would like to be alone, and you people make it impossible for me to be alone. You know, and every good, kind, loving thing I have in my life is a direct result of coming in here bankrupt with nothing, nothing. The only, I haven't been close to a drink in almost 20 years, and the only reason I can say that is I was done. I was absolutely hopeless, wrung out, beaten to a pulp. And I came here, and the lights went on the very first meeting, and I have never, ever been able to deny that the light was here. I haven't liked the light. I haven't wanted to be in the light. I wanted to go back in the dark. But I have never been able to deny that the light was here. But I know that there are people in this room that are going to die drunk. People that are sober, this Ebby had it. Hank had it. You know? And I know it could be me if I don't keep doing what I've been doing, more or less, good and bad, accept my failures, accept that some days the best I can do isn't very good. Some days accept that the hand I've been given to play isn't a very good hand. And just keep showing up. Because there is no place else to go. That's my bottom line with Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like that line from Officer and a Gentleman. There's no place left to go. No place else. This is it. And once that's been settled for me, the rest of it seems to work out. I'll leave you with a story I always leave you with. It's a step about the third step. It's about the deal I think we cut with God. Be very careful if you're new. Once you turn your will and your life over to the care of God, I don't believe he ever gives it back. He's not that stupid. Once he looks at what I did with it when I was in charge, he ain't giving it back to me. So... drunk's going home, he's sick, he's hurt, he's hung out, he's been on a tear, and he runs into God, and God's got something in his hands. And the drunk goes, what's that? And God goes, this, well, this is sobriety. And the drunk goes, oh man, I need that. How much does that cost? Because the drunk only understands buying stuff. God, being manipulative, goes, well, how much you got? And the drunk goes, well, I got about $50. And God goes, okay, for you, sobriety costs $50. And the drunk, trying to back out of the deal, goes, wait a minute, if I give you all $50, I won't have any gas for my car. And God goes, oh. You have a car. Sorry, sobriety is going to cost you your car. He says, wait a minute, if I give you my car, how will I get to my job? God goes, you've got a job? My God, sobriety is going to cost you your job. He says, wait a minute, if I give you my job, how am I going to pay for my house? He says, a home? You have a home? Your list is completely out of date here. I thought you were in the cardboard box down by the railroad tracks, down there in historical Sacramento down there. No. Sobriety costs you your house. He says, wait a minute, what about my wife and my kids? A family. You have a family. Well, sobriety is going to cost you your family. He goes, what if I give you all that? What good is my life? God goes, that's right. Sobriety is going to cost you your life. And the drunk, because he's just at that magic moment of surrender, is willing to give his daddy his money and his car and his house and his job and his wife and his kids, gives his father his life. His daddy gives him sobriety, and then he looks him deep in the eye and he says, all right, I'm going to give you your money back, but it's not your money anymore, it's my money, but you're going to spend it for me. give your car back. It's not your car anymore. It's my car. You know what? I want you to have some people capable of throwing up in that car. You know, I may give you a Mercedes, you Scotch guard it, do whatever you want to, but if you've got a car too good to throw up in, you've got a car too good for a sober alcoholic, because it's not your car, it's my car, but you're going to drive it for me. I'm going to give you your job back, but it's not about being anything or doing anything other than being something like me with the people you work with, because it's not your job, it's my job. You're going to work it for me. I'm going to give you your house back. It's not your house anymore, it's my home, but you're going to live in it for me. I'm going to give you your wife and your kids back. They're not your family anymore, they're my family, but you're going to take care of them for me. I'm going to give you your life back. It's never your life ever again. It's my life. But you're going to live it for me. That's the deal, I believe, that a loving God cuts with every bankrupt alcoholic in this room. You know, and if I keep remembering, it doesn't belong to me. I threw it away. I died. I'm dead. And dead people don't have problems. They don't have relationship problems. They don't have money problems. They're just dead. And I am dead and was given a new life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my only job is to keep coming back, try to do the best I can, and give what I've got away. I don't think I have to worry about anything other than a happy road of destiny. Thank you for letting me share.